from the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Nell Larson is away this week, so joining me is Peter Metcalf. He's Black Diamond founder and now environmental policy advocate, among other things. And Peter, thanks so much for taking the time to co-host this morning.
Thanks, Chris. Pleasure to be here. And well, as you know, the Utah State Legislature is in the midst of their wintertime session, and there are a number of resolutions and bills under consideration by both the House and the Senate, which may impact Utah's land, air, and water in one way or another.
That's right. Joining us in the first half to discuss these legislative proposals will be Ashley Sotishik, the chapter director for the Utah Sierra Club. The Sierra Club has identified a number of high-priority bills, some of which they support, like a resolution that supports environmental stewardship, and some they oppose, like a bill that would request the federal government to exempt Utah from the Antiquities Act.
That's in the first part of the show. Then we turn our attention to another state legislature, Idaho, in their recent decision to weaken and strip out the teaching of climate change science to that state's public school curriculum.
Wow. Glenn Branch is the policy director for the National Center for Science Education, and he'll join us to discuss not only how and why this happened in Idaho, but why more and more anti-science legislation is being written around the country.
We don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our email address, thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Our connections with and impacts upon the environment, that's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Gabriel Melendez, personal banker at U.S. Bank in Park City and sponsor of the Miner Nation Report on KPCW. We offer financial and retirement planning, IRAs, and retirement services, along with investing and wealth management. U.S. Bank is located on the corner of Park Avenue and Deer Valley Drive. USBank.com or 647-3726.
This is Brenda with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage collection. Information about what is acceptable to put in your curbside recycling bin can be found at summitcountyrecycles.org. Please help Summit County be clean. Remember to recycle.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. And you know what? Our relationship and impacts upon that environment. And one of the impacts we may have on the environment, at least here in the state of Utah, is with respect to the state legislature and the number of bills and resolutions that are being proposed right now down at the Capitol during their winter session. And joining us to talk about some of these bills is Ashley Sotishik. She's the chapter director with the Utah Sierra Club. She's down at the Capitol calling us. Ashley, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Thanks for having me this morning.
All right. Thanks for joining Peter and myself on the show. So we got a number of bills that and resolutions, and some of them are joint resolutions, some of them are Senate bills, et cetera, et cetera. The Sierra Club does a great job on their website kind of highlighting what they call the different priorities, high, medium, low priority of some of these bills. So there's a number of high priority bills that you identify. We just have a list here of them. Let's start with House Joint Resolution number 2. It's a resolution urging Congress to relocate Federal Land Management Agency headquarters. This is being sponsored by Senator David Hinkins, a Republican. It's a joint resolution that encourages the federal government to consider moving the headquarters for the Department of the Interior and the U.S. Forest Service to Utah. Now, what's the Sierra Club's point of view on that?
Yes. So this is one of the bills that we are working to fight here on the ground at the Capitol. It's essentially just another piece of this administration's concerted effort to attack our public lands. And so decentralizing public agencies, weakening the Department of the Interior is just one piece of that agenda. And so that's why this is a priority bill for us.
Okay. So you would oppose that move?
Yes.
Okay.
And I heard yesterday that Rob Bishop, Congressman Rob Bishop, was up on the Hill speaking about the efforts to move the Bureau of Land Management's headquarters out to Utah.
Oh,
yes. We had actually heard rumor that Secretary Zinke during his visit was going to announce that, and he ended up talking about grazing corridors instead, but we are hearing that that's going to be, you know, that's certainly in the interest of this administration, so it's one thing that is very concerning, and this joint resolution would just create kind of even more momentum from the state level to support what our congressional delegation is doing and what this administration is doing.
Okay, interesting. All right. So we're just going to go round table here. We all have our favorites. So, Peter, you're next. Do you want to pick one?
Sure. Let me talk for a moment about the vote. I'm going to switch to the clean air issue, which has been such an important issue here in Utah. I think there's a general agreement that the air quality in the Wasatch Front Range spilling over here to Summit County is at times absolutely atrocious. And there's this motor vehicle emissions amendment, and I will kick this off by saying I myself was up in the Hill lobbying with my wife about a week ago, talking to Senator Kevin Van Tassel, talking to him about this and explaining just how bad the air is here. And as the former CEO of Black Diamond, it became an issue in recruiting and retaining high-quality workers. And he looked at me and said, well, if that's really the case, how come we have so many people moving here? How come business is so good, and how come so many businesses are moving here? I just don't see the issue. What do you think of that?
Well, it's ludicrous. We have been out of attainment with federal health standards, which are, you know, the national ambient air quality standards, for over a decade here along the Wasatch Front. While we have seen slight improvements in our particulate matter air quality, we're now seeing even more widespread out of attainment with ozone standards, and we're seeing more and more ozone pollution in the spring and the fall. It used to just be a summertime issue. So this is HB 171, the bill that you highlighted, is a really important one from one of the best clean air advocates up here, Representative Romero. It increases the penalties on coal rollers, and that's a really important bill. It's already passed a House committee and will go to a full House vote now. So it's an important step. It increases the fines from $100 for the first time to $500 for the second time offense, up from $50 and $100, respectively.
So what would you think the chances of that passing? Where does that stand right now? Is it in committee or so?
So it's already passed the House committee. It'll go to a full House vote, and I think we do have enough support to get that one through. This one has been getting a lot of bipartisan support. No one likes to be behind those big polluting diesel vehicles that are just, you know, rolling coal down the highways. I think this one will actually get some traction. So it'll go to a full House vote, then it meets the Senate committee and has two votes in the Senate, and then we'll arrive on the governor's desk. So that's one that we're definitely optimistic about.
Okay, good.
That's great.
Ashley, how about you? You want to pick one? What most resonates with you?
Well, you know, this morning actually has been really exciting. The House Natural Resources Committee is hearing four different bills that are all really environmentally impactful. They've all been stacked into the same committee. Both of the climate resolutions, I guess, are the two that I would like to highlight.
Mm-hmm.
HCR 1 and HCR 7, which are two climate resolutions. The effort's really been shepherded by a number of students who are pushing these. And so it's exciting. Those will kind of get their day in the sun, hopefully pass this House committee. We just had another emissions testing bill, which was HB 101, just passed the committee. And Stephen Handy's bill for freight switchers, which is another air quality bill, is currently being discussed right now and debated in that committee. So it's an exciting morning. Sorry, you said one bill and I said four. But.
Well, that's okay. You condensed them well. And remember, these are resolutions on climate change positions and stance. These are, and we've spoke about this before, these are just resolutions that they're
right.
trying to get through. And last year they did this, was it Becky Edwards or so, was part of one of the champions of this resolution. And it didn't come out of committee, but it tied. Am I right?
Right.
Okay.
So, there were two that were run last year. One of them was never even heard in committee. Becky's that ran last year ended up dying in a tie, and that will be heard, a different version of that will be heard again this morning. Normally, we don't put a ton of stock into working on, you know, resolutions, but this year is sort of an exception to that. Basically, if these resolutions pass, that will sort of set the precedent that state agencies need to begin considering climate change in doing their state planning. So if an agency like the Division of Air Quality, let's say, is doing their state implementation planning process for particulate matter pollution, they need to consider, okay, well, we're going to have a hotter, which means drier climate, which might exacerbate things like dust storms. And so these actually do have a real impact on creating a more of a structure for climate change planning in the state. So they are quite important.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems like even in this state where the governor himself is a climate change denier or constantly questions whether climate change is real and caused by humans, any kind of symbolic gesture that the legislature can make that says, no, climate change is real, is a important first step for us.
Absolutely. This is my fourth legislative session being up here lobbying, and you know, really in the last 2 years are the only times where even being able to say the word climate change wasn't kind of a taboo thing up here, which is quite sad.
Right. Yeah. No, you no longer have to whisper it, let's say that.
Right.
Full breath.
Hey, related to that, I have one more question related on clean air. I know there was a bill up there at the House. I don't know the number, but it was related to Utah County. All diesel vehicles in Utah County are currently exempt from any sort of emissions inspection. And, you know, tens of thousands of those vehicles come on up to Summit County and Salt Lake County and pollute the air. And I know that there was a bill there to say that, no, they need to be inspected and meet a certain standard. Do you know what the status of that is?
Yes. So that bill is HB 101. That was actually the first one that was just passed in this morning's Natural Resources Committee. So it unanimously passed. It will now move to a full House vote. The bill has gone through some kind of compromising. Now, it instead of requiring a mandated emissions testing program, as it initially stated, it now creates an emissions testing pilot program so that Utah County can essentially implement, see if it's working for their county, and reevaluate in 3 years. So it's, you know, it's not quite as robust as we had hoped, but it's a good step in the right direction for getting them to start doing emissions testing. If they did implement a full testing program for all vehicle model years, it would reduce total emissions there by 170 tons per year. So it's a huge impact, and it's one of the lowest cost per ton options we have.
We're speaking with Ashley Sotishik. She's chapter director of Utah Sierra Club. We're talking about the goings-on down at the Capitol during their winter session, some of the proposed bills and resolutions and legislation that has an environmental angle to them, position to them in one form or another. And we're just kind of running through some of the more high priority bills that the Sierra Club is focused on. I want to talk about HJR1. This is joint resolution urging exemption, that Utah would be exempt from the Antiquities Act. The Antiquities Act, among other things, allows the president to designate national monuments. Short definition. This is a request from the state of Utah for have Congress, the federal Congress, to exempt the state of Utah from recognizing or employing, have the Antiquities Act employed in the state of Utah. Now, what's interesting is that Wyoming actually is exempt from executive actions underneath the Antiquities Act. After what's called an unpopular designation of the Jackson Hole National Monument and another area in Alaska. So Alaska was also exempted from further executive. So there's some precedents here that's kind of interesting I wasn't aware of. Ashley, what's your thoughts on this? What kind of traction does this have?
Well, so this bill has actually already passed a committee. It's going to be moving forward as well. It's one that we're definitely opposed to. I think you did a great job of describing the cases for Wyoming and Alaska, which are the only two states that have the Antiquities Act exemption. But the real thing that happened in each of those states is that those the exemption was passed by Congress, but it was coupled with huge public lands expansions in each of those states before they said, okay, now any national monument designation that's made needs to be approved by both houses of Congress. It's really troubling because we've seen exactly the opposite here in huge shrinking for our national monuments of Bears Ears and Grand Staircase.
Yeah, I think what's ironic about it is that if you look at Utah first, that four of our five national parks began life as national monuments without any popular support by the local communities. And today, nobody in their right mind, including those in local communities, would say we should get rid of Zion or Bryce or Capitol Reef or Canyonlands as our national parks. And likewise in Wyoming, what triggered that act was the creation of what was ultimately Grand Teton National Park.
Right,
and
became
the
a park.
Person who championed the attack on that ultimately became governor and said as he retired, I was wrong. That was the best thing that happened to this state was the creation of that monument and that national park. And it is regrettable that even with that hindsight and seeing the benefits that have accrued to the states in the West that have had monument designations that have become so accretive to the economies of the West, that Utah's legislature would be so close-minded and backward-looking that they would push for this ban.
Absolutely. Well, it's just another, we've got kind of this contingent of legislators that are deeply opposed to any public lands designations here in the state. And they're, supporting everything from Representative Chris Stewart's absurd, bill that creates a new national park and two tiny national monuments. It's all part of one kind of, all pieces, I guess, of the same kind of puzzle.
All right. We got about five more minutes or so. Peter, you got another one.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. I mean, since we're on federal land designations, Representative Mike Noel's bill, House Bill 136, but basically, as it was introduced, would strip local communities and municipalities from advocating for federal land protections or for protections of federal lands that they seek to have protected. And this bill was aimed directly at the multi-year planning process that Park City, Summit County, Salt Lake County participated in that created the Mountain Accord proposed legislation that was introduced into Congress to protect parts of the Wasatch. You want to give us an update on that and what the Sierra Club's position is?
Absolutely. So we do still oppose the bill, but as you said, in its original form, it would have made it so that any political subdivision, so even a state-funded university, wouldn't have been able to advocate on behalf of a federal designation like a national monument or a national park. The way that the language was amended and ultimately passed out of a House committee, the same House Natural Resources Committee that Mike Noel sits on, is... I'm sorry, I completely lost my train of thought with all these people wondering. So essentially, the new version of the bill creates basically just a reporting mechanism. Mm. So it's still incredibly paternalistic. If a political subdivision decides to advocate on behalf of a federal designation, they have to tell the interim legislative committee at some point. But it's really vague language now, and it no longer requires a concurrent resolution from the legislature. So the legislature has to hear about it, but they don't have to approve it. Now, certainly there could be repercussions for a political subdivision that steps out of line, and there could be, it could jeopardize potential funding. This is still a very bad bill, but it's been weakened considerably from its first version.
All right. Okay, Peter, you go.
Yeah, one more for you. Probably a lot of our listeners are not very familiar with Representative Mike Noel, who introduced this. I would assume you have become very familiar with him. And you might talk a little bit about Mike Noel and what is his motivations. What's his MO with these raft of bills that he has introduced that are probably some of the worst anti-environmental, anti-conservation, anti-local control bills that I think we've seen in a long time.
Absolutely. So the representative from Kanab, he has introduced this federal designation one. He's the co-sponsor on the Antiquities Act one. He is basically, you know, got his hands in each of these. Another interesting thing that he did yesterday was passed out a request for appropriation for $2 million for Utah state taxpayers to pay for an attack on California's cap and trade program. Now, anyone with common sense or anyone who's followed what's happened with the California Supreme Court knows that this lawsuit is going nowhere. But essentially, he is saying that because they are charging a cost per ton for coal, electricity, and for natural gas, that basically he is contending that they've done harm to the state of Utah. So that's just to kind of give you a flavor of who he is. He advocates on behalf of a lot of really damaging public lands bills. He's very much in cahoots, I guess, with promoting the coal industry. It's interesting for someone with a degree from UC Berkeley.
Right. Right. So $2 million to do what? To go after the state of California in some fashion?
Yeah, I think it's a lawsuit, right, that would just squander away $2 million worth of taxpayers' money in one, a lawsuit that absolutely can't win, and for a cause that is absolutely absurd.
Okay.
Right.
All right. That's Mike. Okay, we'll follow that one. I have one more, and we only have a few more minutes. This is an interesting one. This actually sounds pretty good, right? SCR 8, concurrent resolution in support of the creation of a national park, sponsored by Senator Aukerlund. This resolution supports the U.S. House of Representatives bill, H.R. 4558, introduced to create a new national park and three national monuments. They include Escalante Canyons National Park and Preserve, Grand Staircase National Park, Kaparowitz, is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, yeah.
Kaparowitz National Monument and Escalante Canyons. Now, what's wrong with that? National parks and national monuments. What's the problem there?
Basically, what it's doing is just codifying Rep. Stewart's bill, which was an attempt to legislate President Trump's proclamation shrinking our monument by nearly 80%. So essentially, this bill is a concurrent resolution that is in support of Stewart's bill. But Stewart's bill is not a positive piece of environmental legislation. In fact, it's just chopping up our national monument and creating a small state park and then these two smaller national monuments.
Right.
It completely goes against what's been advocated for by the five tribal nations that have come together to support Bears Ears. And so it's a really... really troubling. I guess that's the bill from Representative Curtis, but
right.
The one from Stewart is in regard to Grand Staircase. Grand Staircase also, if you look at the way that the lines are drawn here, the Kaiparowitz Plateau is one of the most coal-laden areas, and so they are trying to certainly open that up to exploitation. That's one of the key pieces of this legislation.
Okay.
And, you know, I might even add to that, Chris, that what is really troubling about this bill is the national precedence it sets, because in this bill, it creates a national park that's actually a county park. The control of it would shift to the county commissioners in the area, who would have the authority over the national government on what decisions were made. It prioritizes extractive mineral work, grazing, and ORV use over any other kind of use. It gives away the right to the hole-in-the-rock wall road to the state of Utah. It encourages development, and it is unanimously opposed by the Grand Staircase, Escalante, Boulder, Chamber of Business Commerce. 50 businesses are all absolutely opposed to it. So it's really foisting a bill upon the local community and the business community that they don't even want.
All right. Well, all of these bills and resolutions are in play right now. And Ashley, thanks so much for joining us. Again, you can go and learn about these bills. The Sierra Club website has a great aggregation and summary of all these bills, and of course the position that the Sierra Club holds on these bills and resolutions. And Ashley, again, so thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning, this busy morning down there at the Capitol.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the show. And I'm going to head back into committee and hear about both of the climate resolutions, which apparently just came up.
Well, let's plan on talking after the session sometime late in March or so, to get a summary on all this. Thanks again.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right. Good. Let's take a break for some underwriters and sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to kind of continue the conversation on legislate in a legislative mode. And we're going to look at the state of Idaho and what they did recently to change some of education requirements, curriculum requirements with respect to climate change and global warming. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Big D Construction, DeJuria Center at High Star Ranch, and ESCO Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's ESCO, ESCO. Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Hi, this is Steve Roney, owner of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. I'm a proud resident of Park City and a loyal supporter of KPCW and all it does for our community. Our agents in Summit and Wasatch counties can be reached at any of our 30 offices or at our website, bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. Peter Metcalf joins me as guest co-host this morning. After hearing testimony from dozens of students, teachers, and parents, the House Education Committee in the state of Idaho on February 7th voted to strip out sections from the standards that referred to the impact of fossil fuels on the environment, otherwise climate change. In a 12-4 vote on the motion proposed by Representative Scott Syme of Idaho, who led the charge to remove passages referring to climate change and human impact on the environment from the proposed curriculum standards in 2017. Joining us to talk a little more about this whole issue, how it came about, what it involves, and actually looking at the broader scope of this, where anti-science legislation is being promoted in a number of different states, is Glenn Branch. He's the policy director for the National Center for Science Education. Glenn, thanks so much for taking the time to join us this morning on This Green Earth.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start here. If I muddled through that description of what occurred here in the state of Idaho, Give us your take on what this legislation is about and what the results of it are.
Okay, well, it's a fairly long story, and this is because of a distinctive feature of Idaho politics, or rather how the government is set up. So the legislature has the right to review and approve or reject administrative rules adopted by the executive branch of the state. And these include the rules whereby the state adopts new science standards. So Idaho set about in 2015 to develop a new set of science standards. Its previous set of science standards, these are sort of guidelines saying what students should know and be able to do at various points through their education, were out of date and weren't very good in the first place, and they needed a new set. So they developed a set of science standards that included, among other things, the treatment of climate change consistent with our scientific understanding of it. Mm-hmm. They got them approved by the Board of Education, And in order to enact them, they needed an administrative rule. So the administrative rule, unless the standards, went to the legislature for its approval in 2016.
Okay. So, all right. Go ahead.
This is the first time they're going through this, and they're going to do it two more times. And there was a fair amount of expressions of suspicion and hostility toward the inclusion of climate change voiced by members of the House Education Committee. They ended up rejecting all of the standards across the board on the grounds that there hadn't been enough opportunity for public comment.
Really? Public comment. All right, so did they then go out and get public comment?
So here's stage two. So they okay. go out and they get public comment, and they come back the next year, 2017, and want to get the rule enacting the standards approved. This time, the House Education Committee says, we don't like these five passages, all of which deal with climate change and or human impact on the environment.
Okay. So
the writing committee goes back again. They produce softened, weakened versions of these standards that still recognize human impact on climate. And those get approved again by the State Board of Education. And here we are in 2018, and they're back with the House Education Committee. This time, the House Education Committee removes a different standard having to do with climate change that it had previously approved in 2017.
Is that ESS 3-4-1, Earth
That's
and
correct.
Human Activity? Okay, so that gets removed.
That gets removed, even though it had been approved in the previous year by the same committee.
Okay.
They approve one of the revised standards that they found objectionable in 2017, and they decide to take out roughly half of the standards, everything labeled supporting content, which just happens to include four out of five of the passages that they had rejected in 2017. And the offered rationale for removing this supporting content is that, oh, it's unnecessary, it's too prescriptive. But this is the first time in 3 years that anyone has expressed these concerns as a reason for rejecting the standards. So it's hard to avoid the conclusion that this rationale is merely a pretext for continuing the assault on the inclusion of climate change in the standards.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, in reading this story, I was really taken by the House representative in Idaho, Scott Syme, who's pushing this, who said that conclusions on standards stifle inquiry. And I like the line where he said that we should not tell our students conclusions. We should teach them how to engage in inquiry. And if they want to conclude that the earth is flat, that's okay by me. And it just is a ludicrous approach to education, right, that we are not going to now teach conclusions. We're going to let all our students draw their own conclusions, and that's fine.
Well, I think the general approach, and in the education biz, is something called inquiry-based learning, where the idea is that students will better understand the science if they are led to construct it for themselves, if you sort of give them the pieces of the puzzle and help them solve the puzzle, that they understand it better, that sticks with them better. All of this is very plausible. But the thing is, it's very easy to abuse that kind of rhetoric by saying, well, we should teach all sides, we should encourage them to come to their own conclusions. Well, but you don't really mean, Syme doesn't really mean that across the board.
Right.
He doesn't think that it's, I don't think he really thinks it's an acceptable learning outcome for Idaho students to come out thinking that the earth is flat.
Right.
It's just when his particular ox is gored.
So, Glenn, let me ask you this. I mean, I'd like to get to the real heart of this matter. In 2008, John McCain ran for president, a Republican, a conservative from Arizona, on a platform that included acknowledgement of climate change, a cap-and-trade program to deal with carbon emissions, and a very strong platform on that. That was a conservative Republican, 2008. here we are in 2017, and we have legislatures now approving the prohibition of the teaching of human-caused climate change in school systems after somewhere between 97 and 98% of all scientists acknowledge that human activity does cause climate change, and that's a higher, I think, percentage than those who agree that evolution is the basis of our science of the evolution of the planet versus creationism or intelligent design. Can you tell me why the change in 8 years? What has happened in America? Why have we gone from conservative Republicans acknowledging climate change as human, is affected by human activity, to today where we're denying it?
Well, I think it has something to do with the increasing polarization of American politics and American public life, that the extremes, especially on the right, are getting more and more extreme, and in many cases more and more disconnected from reality. And a lot of this has deeper roots, and probably roots I'm not qualified to trace, but there are certainly aspects of the fossil fuel and extraction industries that have provided generous subventions to and other kinds of encouragement to science denial, particularly on the right, in their economic interests. In many cases, it's gotten out of hand and probably beyond what was ever intended.
Yeah. We're speaking with Glenn Branch. He's policy director for the National Center for Science Education. We're talking about, among other things, the recent legislation that was passed in the state of Idaho, which kind of scrubs out or strips out a lot of information or requirements, science standards, with respect to human-caused climate change. So just to kind of wrap up that story in Idaho, what does the science curriculum look like now, or science standards look like, with respect to climate change in the state of Idaho?
Well, this recent vote was only on the part of the House Education Committee, and the resolution approving or rejecting the standards will have three more stops. The most important of those is in the Senate Education Committee. In 2017, the Senate Education Committee showed some signs of being uncomfortable with the decision of the House Education Committee, and I think that pro-science activists in Idaho are hopeful and working to make it a reality that that committee will dig in its heels and try to walk back the House Education Committee's vote to some extent.
Okay.
As things work in Idaho, if the legislature does not get the final decision on whether to approve or reject the standards this year, they will go into permanent effect regardless.
Wow. Okay. Now, are you seeing examples of this in other states? Just with respect to climate science, there's other types of science, anti-science, but let's just stick with climate-based science. Are you seeing other states pursue legislation like this?
Well, we occasionally see pieces of legislation aimed at science standards. Iowa, for several years, had bills to block the adoption of the next generation science standards and then to repeal them. And it was after they were adopted there. And it was clear that the intention of the legislature was, the legislator who proposed this bill, is that she didn't like the inclusion of climate change or evolution, for that matter.
Okay. So
in New Mexico last year, there was an interesting fight where a set of standards based on the next generation science standards had removed from it material on climate change as well as evolution, apparently on the part of the Department of Education, which thought that those topics were too dicey for some of the smaller rural school districts in New Mexico. And there was a huge outcry, and eventually New Mexico adopted the next generation science standards completely intact.
Okay. So that's with respect to climate science. I think we mentioned that intelligent design is also being trying to be introduced, let's say, as part of science. Talk a little bit about intelligent design. What's going on there as your group, the National Center for Science Education, monitors science like that, we'll quote-unquote science like that, around the country?
Sure. Well, after a 2005 decision in a legal case, Kitzmiller versus Dover, which found that the teaching of intelligent design in the public schools was unconstitutional, we've seen a lot fewer attempts to require or allow the teaching of intelligent design in the public schools, just as you would hope. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. A 2007 study, a survey, I should say, of high school biology teachers found that 1 in 8 of them was presenting creationism as scientifically credible, even though it had already been established as unconstitutional in 1987 by the Supreme Court. Just as all politics is local, all education is local. And with something like 13,000 local school districts in the United States, it's very difficult to know what's going on in all of them at any given point.
Wow. 1 in 8. That's based on my school-based math. That's about 13%.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it?
That's impressive. Yeah. Astounding. Are you seeing things like this happening in Utah legislation?
So there hasn't been any push for any kind of anti-evolution legislation in Utah since 2006, I believe. Mm. So you've had a decade free of it. Whether or not there's been individual things in school districts, I'm not aware of any offhand. In many school districts, of course, it's quietly tolerated or approved of, and no one outside the district will ever know unless there's a complaint.
So it sounds like it's not just anti-science. It's turning science into a philosophical discourse. It's like, well, I believe in this, and I don't believe in that. And so everything, like going back to Representative Symes' thought that, oh, it should be inquiry-based, and I don't care if they decide that the Earth is flat. It's their decision.
That's a pretense, right? I think what's going on now, we've moved from, a society that can agree upon a set of facts and then debate the facts and determine what are the best policies to come from them. Mm. But because some of those debates are hard to win if you're in the other side of them, you develop what is in the common lexicon today is now the alternative facts, which is a nice name for lies.
Right.
So you don't have to engage in a thoughtful debate on an agreed set of facts. You can make up your own facts and then say, I don't believe your science, so policies don't have to adjust to the reality.
Opinion-based science. It's like saying, what if I was a politician, Glenn, and I said, I don't believe in this flu, this virus-based diseases. I've never seen a virus, have you? Except in some photo that's probably Photoshopped by scientists whose job it is to study viruses. So I don't believe in virus, but I don't think we should be spending money on healthcare. But I think it's all a big scam generated by the National Institute of Health and the Center for Disease Control. Do you see, that's kind of, I don't even know if that's fringe anymore. Yeah. That's possible it's opinion-based science going on.
Right. Well, with your hypothetical virus-denying politician, I think the problem that he's going to have in his career is that there's not a built-in constituency.
Yet.
Whereas in the case of evolution denial or climate change denial, a politician who wants to take those routes can tap into some deep-seated religious and political, respectively, identities that people have.
Right.
And someone who decides that they're going to support a creationist-friendly politician or a climate change denial-friendly politician, it's not going to do so because they're carefully evaluating the scientific literature and matching it up. It's because they're going to regard that politician as sharing their, as it were, tribal identity. Mm. He's one of us. I'll vote for him.
I get it.
I might add to that is just having read a lot about this subject, I think everybody understands now through the Freedom of Information Act how the tobacco industry worked really hard to discredit all the research into the correlation between smoking and cancer as a means to prolong their prosperity in selling cigarettes, and finally they were trashed. Likewise, from what I've read, that after McCain came out with his agenda as the presidential candidate to deal with climate change, it was the extractive industries that decided to engage in the same sort of thing, creation of think tanks, hiring of scientists for hire to be their experts to promote an agenda that human activity does not cause climate change. In between the think tanks, their money, the talking heads on the right-wing radio shows, contributions to elected officials, they began to move their agenda forward, which was to deny its existence. And yet we look at the Utah legislature, according to the Salt Lake Tribune's recent survey or analysis, 97% of our legislators' campaign contributions come from corporations and not individuals. And that right there tells you really who's in control of much of the political process.
Right. Go ahead, Glenn.
I'm sorry. Let me add to that that some of the very same people who orchestrated the denial of the link between tobacco and cancer then went to work for the campaigns denying the link between fossil fuels and climate change. And this is all detailed in a marvelous book by Naomi Oreskes and Eric Conway called Merchants of Doubt.
Right. And I believe you can – oh, it's a fabulous book and even a documentary on it. And you can look towards the Heartland Institute, right, Glenn, for the source of all this anti-science and anti-climate rhetoric.
The Heartland Institute, among others. They're not the only culprits here.
No. They lead the way. Glenn, we've got a couple minutes. Talk to us a little bit about what the National Center for Science Education does.
Well, we defend the integrity of science education against ideological attacks. And in practice, that means attacks from creationists and climate change deniers for the most part.
It's incredible just to think that we need to do that today in a modern, knowledgeable society, but we do.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's a full-time position, Glenn.
I'm afraid so.
You and your staff out of Oakland, California. And the website is ncse.com. Again, Glenn Branch, Policy Director with the National Center for Science Education. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us on This Green Earth this morning.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's take a break for a couple of underwriters and sponsors. And we come back. We got a news item or two to continue this conversation on legislation and climate change. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Dr. Bob Miller here from Miller Orthodontics, proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton, who makes us all smile. Embrace is a technology to straighten teeth without anything showing. More information about Embrace is at myembrace.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain instructors share their love of skiing and snowboarding with guests, helping them improve their skills and enjoy the mountain. More information on Ski and Snowboard School and other programs at parkcitymountain.com.
G'day, this is Ashley from Campus Coffee, happy to sponsor programming on KPCW. We can't wait to serve the Park City locals this winter. We're excited by our breakfast and lunch menu to complement our espresso drinks. Campos Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, up the stairs from the ice rink next to the Adirondack chairs. CamposCoffee.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. You know, we got just a few minutes left. I wanted to talk about this latest quote or thoughts from Scott Pruitt. He's the head administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency, the agency formerly known as the Environmental Protection Agency. Here's what he said recently when asked about human-caused climate change and whether the planet is actually warming. It's quote-unquote, is it an existential threat? Is it something that is unsustainable? Or what kind of effect or harm is this going to have? We know that humans have most flourished during times of what? Warming trends. So I think there's some assumptions made that because the climate is warming, that this necessarily is a bad thing. So he goes on and talks about trying to find, you know, gain some traction and support on the fact that, hey, a warmer world basically is probably a better world for us. And then there are plenty of climate-related scientists, including Michael Mann out of the Penn State University and the Union of Concerned Scientists, who strongly disagree On a factual basis, mainstream climate scientists fully reject the idea that climate change can be a net positive for humans. And they say the ideal change in temperature is as close to current temperatures as possible.
Yeah, you know, I might just add to that that I think one of the other arguments on this is that it's not only the issue of climate warming, it is, one, the speed of the warming.
Right, the
because
rate.
Because animals and insects and the whole biology, the planet, can't adapt at the speed at which it's changing. We also have civilizations built right at the edge of rising oceans that would be decimated. And then we have the chaotic weather, the volatility, as we've seen this past year with forest fires because of severe droughts, giant hurricanes wiping out whole communities, flooding cities. So there's huge cost involved with this and the decimation of the flora and fauna of the planet as we know it.
Right. And look, let's be clear. Climate scientists knew that changes were occurring back in the early part of this century, right? They were telling IPCC reports said changes on its way. It's 2018. It's here, okay? It's here. Look outside and see evidence of a changing climate here in Utah, here in Park City, Summit County. And we want to host the Olympics when? Yeah. 2030, 2026, 2030. Well, let's talk to Brian McInerney in the National Weather Service about what he thinks the weather and the climate will be like here in 2030 if the things continue as the way they are. So it's happening, it's here, but it's Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, sowing doubt. I'm just another one of those merchants of doubt with respect to human-caused climate change. All right, enough opinionating what we do here every now and then on This Green Earth. One more break. When we come back, we got to wrap up. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Rimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Hey, it's time to wrap things up. This Green Earth, again, let's thank Ashley Sotishik, Chapter Director of Utah Sierra Club, who came on and gave us a legislative update. Glenn Branch, Policy Director with the National Center for Science Education, talking about what's going on in Idaho with respect to climate change science curriculum and elsewhere around the country. And, of course, let's thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain, and, of course,
Listeners like you,
that you guys make this show happen. Send us your thoughts and ideas and comments about what we're talking about and what you want to hear us talk about to our email address, thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. Again, thanks. We got another minute, Peter. Thanks again for taking the time to co-host the show. Good job.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here with you, Chris. It's a great show. And these topics right now are of such incredible importance to us, especially with the legislature in session and the number of bills that they're looking at that really will have a huge impact on our community, on our water, on our air,
our land, landscape, our natural resources. Yes, our landscape, our energy matrix, et cetera. It's all in play. The one thing, real quick, I'm encouraged, at least, and I think Ashley would agree, Sarah. I'm encouraged by, at least I see some trends happening where in these resolutions and bills on the environment are actually being talked about.
That is encouraging, and I encourage everyone to get involved.
Yes.
Look at the Sierra Club website. Look at Save Our Canyons. You can go to the Hill, and you can lobby. It's easy to do, and you will be there with hundreds of others of your fellow citizens.
All right. Well put. We'll finish it at that. Thanks again for joining us on This Green Earth. We'll join you again next week, same time. And NPR News is coming up. Stay tuned.